Okay, I will call the Wilmot Municipal Utilities Commission to order on Monday, February 12, 2018, at 11:45. And we'll start out with looking at our consent agenda. We'll open that up for resolution to accept that, and then we'll go into discussion if there's changes.
So move.
Okay, second?
Second.
Okay, additions or corrections to the agenda, any comments on that? Minutes from our January 22nd, 2018 meeting. They look okay, if not. Any corrections on that? And then a review and payment of bills, looking at those. And if none from the commission, I'd like to, Ms. Manager, to make a comment on that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 8, you'll see that we completed our pen test. There's an invoice there for payment of it. Pen test identified low to medium security concerns, and Mike is in the process of remediating them. And then the company will do a second test to make sure that we have adequately addressed them. So pen test that Mike referred to earlier has been completed.
The only question I had, and it wasn't a big bill, was it said maintenance letter opener, and I wasn't sure how much maintenance there was on that, but it is the machine that they're doing the maintenance on, so. Was pretty much standard. No other questions? Beth, go ahead and take roll call, please.
Certainly. Commissioner Weber?
Aye.
DeBleek?
Aye.
Magnuson?
Aye.
McDonald?
Aye.
Wammer?
Aye.
Mattern?
Aye.
Mabou?
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay, well, next on the agenda here, we have some bid recommendations and awards, and we'll let engineer Mr. Smith talk to that, address that.
Thank you. Good morning. The first item here is the diesel generator NESHAP upgrades. NESHAP is National Emission Standards for Hazardous Air Pollutants. We presented this to you at the Planning Committee first on December 15th of 2017, and then it was authorized by the Commission on December 26th of 2017. But basically, the EPA hasn't changed their rules. MISO, our transmission operator, has. So the way we operate our diesels right now, we only use them for emergency purposes and maintenance purposes, and that is okay under the EPA rules, but MISO wants all of the generators that receive capacity credits to be in compliance with these NESHAP rules. And the capacity credits are quite valuable, and so we're pursuing this project to get them in compliance with those regulations. We released the bid specs on January 8th. We sent them out to three different companies capable of doing this work. We only received one proposal back from Ziegler Power Systems. It was in the amount of $377,980. Their proposal is to remove a section of the roof panel and the existing silencers, the muffler that sticks out the top, basically, fabricate a new one and put it on with the new silencing and oxidation equipment on it. They will provide and mount all the data logging and monitoring equipment, and then they'll facilitate the compliance testing with the EPA. Also in the proposal, they included a quite lengthy list of all the other projects they've done. That's basically the same thing, NESHAP upgrades for the same model and make of our generator. So with that, I would recommend that the 2018 diesel generator NESHAP upgrades contract be awarded to Ziegler Power Systems in the amount of $377,980, and I would answer any questions you may have.
Just one, and I know that's looking into the crystal ball, but with all the issues that have been going on with the EPA and that type of thing, do you think once we get to compliance, you know, is it going to be solid so that they're not changing it?
Yeah, you have a hard time answering that question.
I'm not really sure
what's going to change and how even politics are going to affect that too. So.
Okay. And this is something that we should be doing now. There's no need to wait on doing any of this.
Well, the issue with waiting is that we wouldn't be able to register these diesel generators for capacity credits. And I believe it's a couple $100,000 a year.
I haven't calculated, but yeah, they add up. We got 12 megawatts of diesel generation out there that we use as capacity, depending on what kind of value you want to put on. Capacity credits are relatively inexpensive at this point in time, but the dollars do add up. So.
Okay. Okay, I'll make the resolution, the motion for the resolution to approve this bid from Ziegler. Obviously, we went out to others so that this one's responded. I'll make that resolution that we accept this, and then I look for a second.
Second.
Question.
Okay, that's what I was going to say, questions.
We get about a $200,000 credit, capacity credit for the diesel generators. So we're looking at about a two-year payback on this?
When we ran the numbers on the known capacity credits that we get currently, it was a two-and-a-half-year payback.
Okay.
And as John said, that's subject to change, but we feel the market is light right now, so that could actually improve.
And these are going to remain on the trailers, right? We're not moving them off the trailers or anything like that?
Yep. The plan is to keep them in the containers that they are on the trailers right now.
Okay, any other items for discussion regarding this resolution? Hearing none, roll call, please.
Commissioner DeBleek?
Aye.
Magnuson?
Aye.
McDonald?
Aye.
Lahmer?
Aye.
Mattern?
Aye.
Weber?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. And now we'll go on to the Priam substation recommendations there, and we'll also let Jared speak to that.
Thank you again. This project is actually not related to the Priam substation. However, because it is basically the same piece of equipment that we need at the Priam substation, we lumped it into the bid documents just to hopefully get a quantity discount on the circuit breaker here. So what we have is a circuit breaker that energizes and de-energizes the capacitor bank at our south substation. Last summer, that piece of equipment failed. And it's a fairly expensive piece of equipment, so we put it in the capital improvement budget for 2018 and just released the bids for it in conjunction with the Priam substation materials package. Those were released on February 5th. We received four proposals back for this one specific bid item, which is a 69 kV circuit breaker. We also had an optional item, which is an independent pole operated circuit breaker. So we have a three-phase power system, and basically your standard breaker opens all three phases at the same time. An independent pole-operated breaker would open the A phase, B phase, and C phase independently. And if you think of a capacitor bank as a whole bunch of batteries in a simple form, they will discharge and charge at different rates depending on the sine wave, which is the AC current. You can end up getting a voltage spike if the two peaks line up at the right time. And so by operating those different phases independently, you actually get a smoother close and a smoother open. For the size of bank we have and the load we have, We haven't seen any issues with doing the standard breaker, opening and closing all three phases at the same time. And therefore, we're comfortable moving forward with the standard operating, but we just wanted to get pricing on the independent pole operation in case we wanted to expand the capacitor bank down the road. We know we have options to move forward with generation here locally. We've got Priam substation, so there's a lot of different things going as we look into the future for our transmission and voltage support, things like that. And so we wanted to evaluate our options. The way the prices came in, it's almost three times as much to get the independent pole operated, so we feel we're comfortable moving forward with the standard breaker on that. The low bidder was in the amount of $35,860 from Siemens Industries, and DGR actually put this bid spec together, and they reviewed it for conformance with the bid specifications, and so I would concur with their recommendation to award this contract to Siemens. Are there any questions on this one?
So going on the recommendation from DGR for this, and I would assume you looked at some of those compliance issues or not? We just start going with the recommendation from them.
As far as conformance with the bid specs, yes. Yep.
Okay. Any questions for Jaron?
When did you say it failed, and how has it affected operation since then?
So the main purpose of this capacitor bank is for voltage support during our peak times. It failed in June of 2017, and it just so happened we didn't really have a hard peak year, and there's other things that we can do to mitigate the need for the bank, so we basically went all summer without it. The existing configuration is there's one piece of equipment for each phase, and just one phase of those failed. And so, yeah, that's where we've been.
Question, Mattern.
Thank you. Jim, what's the timeline for getting this implemented and moving forward?
Well, that's a great question, and that's why we're doing this one before all the Priam substation bids. But the breaker itself is a 14 to 18 week lead time, and so if we authorize the order today, it's 18 weeks, and I think that puts us to mid-June. And then it's going to be a couple week installation, so we're already hitting July, which is when the weather gets hot and our load gets up there, and that's why we're trying to move this one forward as quickly as we can. And the remaining Priam substation bids, which have already been released and received, will come before you at the next commission meeting.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Jaron? I would look for a motion to accept the resolution for this contract with Ziegler in the amount of $35,860.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Motion to accept this resolution, to accept this bid, have been made. Any further discussion? Roll call, Beth.
Aye. Commissioner Magnuson?
Aye.
McDonald?
Aye.
Lahmer?
Aye.
Mattern?
Aye.
Mabul?
Aye.
Weber?
Aye.
DeBleek?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. Next we'll go on to our educational subjects there, and we'll start out with a power supply update from our manager, Chris Carlson, please.
So at the last meeting on December 26, 2017, we looked at the modeling comparison results. All of the models included the decommissioning of the district heat on July 1st, 2020. The business as usual model was most expensive, which was no surprise. It was $4 million more. Then the independent model was approximately $600,000 more than the joint action agency model. So the commission directed us to confirm the assumptions in the joint action agency model. So two agencies were contacted, Southern Minnesota Municipal Power Agency, SMMPA, and Missouri River Energy Services, MRES. Both agencies were interested in the potential to add us as a member. We have received their proposals, and later on this afternoon and tomorrow afternoon, our team is going to meet to discuss the pros and the cons and the details within. So we hope to have a recommendation ready to present to the commission at the next meeting on February 26th, and hopefully have a planning committee meeting prior to that as well. So any questions?
Looks like nothing at this time, Chris. Okay,
thank you.
Energy acquisition adjustment.
Yes. So just a quick update that the purpose of the EAA is to allow for uncontrollable changes to electric rates and to account for increases and decreases in power supply costs, specifically variable costs like fuel, repairs, and changes in the electric market. At the November 14th, 2016 meeting, we were approved to apply a 4 mil energy acquisition adjustment to the December 2016 billing cycle. Since then, through between December 2017, we've collected $1.189 million. And when projecting the 2018 costs along with net sales, is estimated that we will be close to neutral by the end of this year. So the EAA will be closely monitored on a monthly basis and will be brought to the Commission's attention if an EAA is warranted.
Okay. Questions for Chris? And again, I did discuss with Mr. Heron a little bit about whether that stays on or off, and the idea is to bring it forward to the, a little bit more in depth to the Planning Commission, whether if we're not collecting anything, whether that stays on as a zero or a small amount, and some of those things are going with that. So the Planning Commission will have that on there. A little bit more in details at the Planning Commission, and this is an informational piece at this point. And hearing no questions, thank you very much. And then we'll go on to the power plant year-end review. And we'll let Supervisor Mr. Marty and Mr. Hoover welcome. Ones that we've seen you here at meetings before, so welcome.
Thank you. So we've got the year-end review for the power plant. Excuse me. In front of you, trying to keep things kind of at a high level, kind of hit some of the key things that have happened in the past year. At the plant itself, starting with the cooling towers, as you recall, we did the demolition and removal of towers 1 through 4, and then rebuilt towers 5 and 6. That work happened this past summer. Staffing at the power plant, the operating schedule got a little adjustment this year. They went to what we're calling an 8-4 schedule due to our staffing levels, where we're running boiler 4, the package boiler, for 8 months out of the year, and then boiler 3 for 4 months out of the year, because that requires more manpower. Ended 2017 with 11 full-time operating staff. One custodian, and then 3 people in the supervisor or lead positions. Throughout last year, we had 4 total employees leave the power plant. 3 took employment elsewhere, and 1 left and relocated out of state. So that was staffing as of the end of the year. The diesel generators, as we mentioned earlier, the NESHAP upgrades, those are scheduled for completion in mid-May. Hope to not have any issues there. And then HDMK consulting and maintenance staff will be doing the monthly checks as he always has, and then our maintenance staff will be working with him with any maintenance needs. And then our yearly service has been scheduled with Ziegler Cat the last couple of years, and and we'll take a look at that as well this coming fall. The wind turbines. Quite a bit of things to cover here. The D-Wind and Chad Sanders status that is in your outline, I'll kind of dive into that a little further. D-Wind, as a company, eliminated its U.S. market here this past year or two and no longer technically exists in the United States. We're still uncertain or unknown what capacity they have as an actual parent company in Europe and Asia. At this time, I guess we're still looking into that. Staff here at the utilities kind of recognized that situation and approximately a year or so ago reached out to Frank Zimkus at Go to Zero Engineering in Germany. Frank is a former D-Wind employee. We utilize him for have a licensing agreement in place with Go to Zero. And helps us out on the computerized side, I guess, of the wind turbines. Works with Jaron and his staff. Frank has also been a good resource for us and has got us in contact with other companies in Europe that utilize D-Wind turbines, one of them being TTS Renewable out of Germany also, that they're a fairly good size, it appears, wind turbine company that operates D-Wind turbines. And we are trying to get our foot in the door and have a relationship with them for parts and those sorts of things. Just another avenue for parts and database, those sort of things. Frank is also trying to put together, I guess, per se, a database of the wind turbine owners throughout the world, I guess, so that we all have kind of one spot to go to kind of share resources. So he, you know, had mentioned to Jaron via email that he's going to be working on that. So we're looking forward to being part of that as well. Chad Sander is also a former DeWind USA employee. He actually has worked with our turbines quite a bit in the past and performed our fall maintenance in 2017 through Sealing Electric. He's kind of been our main source of technical support, I guess, and troubleshooting here in the United States. And we're kind of, we asked Chad to give us a proposal to continue wind turbine support for diagnosis and repair needs as our staff needs him. He's a very good technical resource for that. So we're awaiting that. And then we're also exploring other companies within the United States for those same services. Chad is kind of the de facto expert on wind turbines in the States. As far as replacement parts and tech support status on the wind turbines, these turbines are, like it says in your outline, they're foreign built and quite uniquely built, I guess, and they're very proprietary design parts, things like that. The world that I come from prior to this is in the automotive world, and you could buy parts from General Motors for your GM car, or you could go to Napa. Well, there is no Napa for wind turbine parts for D-Wind. There isn't a source for aftermarket parts per se. So what you have to, when you need parts, you need to find that somebody already has it and is willing to sell it, and that's kind of the challenges that we're looking through right now. So very limited quantities of parts in the United States, so we'll be looking overseas for quite a bit of that as we move forward. Excuse me, the breaker replacements. One breaker was replaced in the fall of 2018. Since then, the breaker that we purchased, or the company that we purchased that breaker from, has gone out of business. So we sourced a second breaker for the other wind turbine from a new supplier, and that is on order with a 12 to 14 week time frame. Those breakers are being replaced as more of a preventative maintenance have a life cycle of breaker trips, I guess you could say, and 10,000 trips, and both of those breakers have met that. So replacing those breakers, more of a preventive maintenance, then we'll have these breakers that we take out as spares for emergency use. Turbine number four, the turbine which has been standing still for a little while, that turbine currently has a what's called a Rexroth hydraulic pitch control board that's failed in that unit, and correct me if I'm wrong, Brian, but that controls the actual pitch of the blades. It reads the wind and knows how to pitch the blades to get the maximum effort out of the wind turbines. So without that pitch control unit working, the wind turbine would basically just spin out of control and not be a good thing. So what's happened with that part, about approximately 3 weeks ago, that part was removed from the wind turbine, and the turbine blades are set at zero so they won't spin, and sent out for repair. We had a company, a local company, that said that they could repair that part. They, in turn, sent the part to a branch or another company in Texas. They asked for the other components. There's actually three components to this assembly, the two electronic components and a hydraulic component. We sent all those components down to Texas. They took a look at it and deemed it as non-repairable. So in turn, we sourced a replacement hydraulic pitch control assembly, and that was actually placed on order this past Friday, and that part has approximately a 14-week timeline. The older part was sent back to us, and the guys went up in Thursday, replaced it back in the wind turbine. It's not operational, but it will hold the blades at zero, so we don't have any failures, basically. So that's where we're at with turbine number four. So unfortunately, we foresee it standing still for a little while yet, until that part comes in. As far as capital improvement projects that were completed at the power plant last year, as you remember, the coal area runoff project was canceled due to our discontinuation of coal use, although the 7th Street fence project was part of that project, and that was completed. The Cullen Towers, as I mentioned before, the rebuild and demo on those was completed this past year. And then the only other capital improvement expenditure to note was the purchase of a new payloader for its final three operating seasons. And then just a brief recap on safety training, the rappelling training was completed as required at the power plants. If you have some questions, I'd like to defer them all to Brian.
Well, I know that we will see, you know, what the production of kilowatts and stuff, and, you know, we're way behind in that because I've had some inquiries as to that. So the more information that we can just kind of provide that gets out to our customers will be good, because they do call and say, hey, that's not working and that type of thing. So, well, Mr. Sanders, he then works or is aware of this person in Germany. Is that kind of a tie for those two to working, you know, so that we get, if Chad is the only one here in the States that you feel is comfortable, but there's this person in Germany, is he, you know, is that like a backup for us to go to then?
I believe that Frank in Germany doesn't really do a lot of the,
doesn't come to the United States.
Okay. More on the, the engineering side, Jerry?
Frank basically designed the software, the control system to run the turbines, and so he can provide the licensing and the troubleshooting when it gets into the programming and control of it. Chad provides a lot of the hands-on troubleshooting experience to know how to chase down what's not working and identify the problem.
Okay. Other questions from the commission? Commissioner Madden.
Thank you. Kevin, thank you for the report, and Brian, thank you for being here. Appreciate the information. As we've shifted a little bit on the coal side of things over to natural gas over at the plant, how has that been going now that we've kind of been in that phase for a little while? And do you foresee any issues right now with that?
It's been going pretty good. The guys are really subjective to change. The biggest change is our generation with the steam temp has been a lot of issue. We're trying to figure out a hunting problem on our generator. We have a issue where it'll try to find its spot. Looked into the governor a little bit on that, and had a couple people from the electric side, which is the generator side of that, out to look at that, and they've deemed that not a problem. So it's not on the generation side, it's on the turbine side of it. And that's kind of the issues we're having over there. As far as employment, the guys are relatively all open to, you know, when we're short staff, we pick up shifts. People put a little bit of overtime in and pick up shifts. In the future, I can't tell you how that'll work, but you know, if we lose more employees, that, you know, we're going to have to look at it at that time. But
thank you. We appreciate the work that you're doing and that the staff over there is doing. So, thank you.
Commission matter, I'll expand on that just a little bit more. As Brian alluded to, you know, and Kevin in the report, that we've had a reduction in staff this year. Although we're operating with the gas, coal, through the winter here, the decision was made to run the coal plant or the generator using gas or and or coal. Once we hit middle of March here, we'll be back to the package plant, and we can run the package plant, Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, but comfortably with six individuals, which gives us one individual to help cover vacations and sick and whatever else we may have come up. So when we're on package four, we have adequate staff, more than adequate at this point in time. But you know, as we go forward, you know, if employees find the opportunity for other employment, we could potentially get down to that level of six where it becomes more concerning. So
any other questions for either of them? We'll just be the, you know, the between those two items, but especially, you know, the wind turbine seemed to me, you know, it just challenging, and we still got a little ways to go before the quote paid off. So keep up the good work, Brian. Keep your guys working and that type of thing as well.
Madam Chair, I just have a quick question.
Sorry.
In terms of the turbines, you know, are they all made out of this country, or everything is
from the turbines are from a German based company? Correct.
Okay. So I was wondering, is it really, you know, looking now in terms of a lot of maintenance issues, and this company, what is the DeWin, is that the correct name?
Correct.
It's no longer, you know, supplying.
Yep.
How would you see feasibility, you know, continuing on all these wind turbines in the future?
I guess with the staff we have, and then with Kevin to my right, he's been really looking into other avenues of trying to find the parts, along with Frank. Frank's found a couple avenues we can get, you know, parts from. So I can't say we'll have all the parts, but we got avenues to look for them. So we're gonna look for them, and hopefully, you know, we can have what we need as anticipated as spare parts, and then the ones that are, you know, a lead time, we'll just have to, you know, wait the lead time for the part.
Is it paying off? That my concern is really, it's just about how, because we know that the political world is also changing, you know, dramatically, and I know that a lot of stuff, especially things that coming from overseas, will be penalized more, and it will cost more. So I was wondering if it's really wise to continue in that path, or how they're going to be more efficient for us, you know, for the turbines.
Commissioner, Madhu Mamu, I'll try and field that question for you. You're absolutely right. It's going to become more challenging, and with the tax credits and stuff, parts coming overseas are going to be more expensive. As we research, as staff research options here, we do look in the country for parts, and we find some availability within the country. However, from what we're finding out, we are going to have to go across seas to find probably a fair amount, the majority of our parts in these wind turbines. We've also reached out to other wind turbine companies, and they tell us the same thing. There's a lot of proprietary parts in these which are not standardized with other brand turbines made in the United States here. So it's been a challenge for staff to find parts there, but they've been doing an excellent job finding what they can is in as a timely manner that we can possibly find them. So it's going to continue to be a challenge.
So do we have anything to mitigate, you know, because it's just that in the future, how, you know, continuing?
That's, as we talked about a little bit earlier, we're trying to develop a database of resources of where can we go for certain type of parts. What can we get here in the United States? What other companies here in the United States and overseas have the wind turbines? Where are they going for parts? So we're in the process of developing. Very good question, and we don't have the answers to that question yet, as this is fairly new with DeWind, and we've been working on trying to determine where we can go for these resources. So more to come. We'll keep you posted as we learn more about our options and availability in the future here.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you again. Kevin and Brian for the update and for the work that's being done. I just commend the people that have to climb up and work inside there, and I just think about it gives me the heebie-jeebies, so thanks again to your staff. Okay, then we'll go on to our compliance officer and HR administrator, Janelle, and she'll give us kind of an overview of what's been going on regarding safety and compliance.
Thank you. I will start with safety. I have included in your packets some more detailed information, but I'll just hit some of the highlights. In 2017, Safety Committee held 11 meetings during the year. The employees on the Safety Committee represent all departments across the utility and is the driving force and support behind our safety training program. I'd like to recognize the Safety Committee members for their dedication to the entire staff as they have worked hard on policy, kept the departments informed, and gave outstanding reports for the mission of the safety program. And the members are John Heron, Bill Baker, Aaron Nelson, Steve Hillenbrand, Joe Johnson, and Kevin Murray. So they've done an outstanding job communicating with employees and safety. WMU employees probably reached 394 days or 9,400 work hours in 2017 with no lost time injuries, but 24/7 operations. As of today, we're at 437 days. Our record is 442, so we're inching up to surpass our record. I'm really proud of the employees. They've really done a good job working safely. We ended 2017 with 8 injuries. 4 received medical treatment, 4 did not. Two that received treatment are OSHA recordable, and 2 are not. And OSHA does have guidelines what's recordable and what isn't, so we had 2 recorded there. And then we also had 2 of our employees had a large shift in their threshold in their audio, so we also had to report that to OSHA. On near misses, we had 1 near miss reported in 2017 compared to 7 reported in 2016. We've taken them seriously with changes that are being made in standard operating procedures along with retraining for those procedures, and full discussion has taken place at the safety meeting level. In 2017, we contracted with Bridgewater College for customized training, and this has been a positive transition for all of the staff. The schedule's been designed around the required OSHA trainings as well as the needs for the employees and their specific job duties. The training schedule remains a living document to allow flexibility, and the change is based on the training needs of the employees throughout the year. For 2017 safety highlights, we completed 11 safety committee meetings. We had 27 safety topics, 4 JTMS training to the line department, which is required. As well as several special sessions. We had forklift training and certification for all staff, food shop clinic, audio testing, fit testing, catastrophic tabletop exercise, wind tower climbing refresher, and Kansas High County traffic education. Again, the highlight was no lost time injuries for 2017, which is key. We transitioned from MMUA to Bridgewater College Customer Training in October. Management employees have been very supportive and cooperative with the training to update the company's safety program. We celebrated with staff twice this year. First time was our RP3 diamond designation through APK, which was huge. Lift for the organization, as well as a great reflection on employees and work in safety, is that award has a lot of safety-based information that is required. So in June, we recognized staff on that. And then in December, we recognized staff again with 365 days in the world. So it's very important to recognize staff when they are really giving their concentrated effort. We completed the buildings inspections in August, and in April we had Southwest EMS traffic training and program simulator come out with and test our driving skills, which was very interesting, educational, and entertaining also. Overall, we raised the bars for our employees as they continue to rise to the top. For 2017, I've submitted the application to the APPA and the Minnesota Governor's Safety Awards. Determinations will be announced in May. Many good things are to come in 2018, and we'll look at training and furthering our opportunities with different approaches, more hands-on at the work site, in addition to another catastrophic tabletop exercise. But this time it'll be coming through Ridgewater, and I think it'll be at a much higher level as they practice these with other organizations. So I'm really excited about it. It's going to raise our tabletop event to the next level for our staff. So with that, I want to thank the commissioners for your strong support in our safety program and recognizing the importance of safety. My goal as a safety officer is to keep the safety culture flourishing with the support from the administration and employees, which has been outstanding. This will be achieved by raising the bar on employee participation, creating opportunities for training with employee input needs, and keep each employee focused on the safety of the workplace by caring about the people and not the statistics. Do you have any questions on that?
Just one quick question. When you talk about near misses, is that something that has to be reported, that you make a report just internally? Because I assume it's a self-reporting type thing.
Yes, near miss is if something almost happened but didn't. You know, something could drastically have happened,
bad,
but it didn't, you know, because something
bad
happened. And so we encourage them to report the near misses so we can change the standard operating procedures, you know, to avoid that, so that would not happen.
It's good so they don't get penalized for reporting something, but it can improve operations. That was my only question. Okay.
All right. So that was the fun part of my job. And next I have the NERC report, which you have the detailed information is included in your packet. And again, I'm just going to hit some highlights for you and would be happy to answer any questions. We have that report. It's a high priority to keep the commission updated on the activities and happenings in compliance as part of our internal compliance plan. To summarize the report for you, in 2017, we were responsible for 19 standards, 56 requests, requirements and 50-plus sub-requirements. I rely on staff subject matter experts to compile the necessary data for all the reporting and certifications. Much of the data is required from GRE as a transmission operator. In 2017, MRO required no guided self-certifications from WMU, which are the internal audits that we have to submit. That was huge. In 2016, we were audited on three standards, and after nearly 12 to 15 months, in 2017, I received letters on each one of those standards that were passed the audits successfully and are reported compliant on those three standards. So they're a little slow down there, but at least they did let us know we pass. Our testing, our semi-annual battery testing, was completed by staff at the lower sub as required, as well as our substation inspections. Our reporting for MRO in Europe was completed in the I attended several technical conferences throughout the year with MRO and MCCF. The main focus has been on compliance and audits with the new cyber infrastructure protection standards. As a low-impact facility, and that is what our Willimer substation is designated, the bulk of the technical standards went into effect in 2017. They are not unusual, but slightly complicated as we share joint ownership with GRE. Because of our unique circumstances in joint ownership, MRO used this joint ownership scenario as a teaching tool in the March 2017 CIP conference that was held in St. Paul. So they took our layout, our scenario, our ownership, and gave it to the organization as another way to solve these identifying issues and responsibilities in the standards. I continue my seat on the MRO Compliance Committee, representing the municipal sector. The board is a member representative committee with direct oversight from MRO Board of Directors to provide objective stakeholder input to the MRO staff implementation and the compliance monitoring and enforcement program. We direct the related activities and training and education initiatives for the region. The meetings attended in 2017 have been exploring high-level issues surrounding implementation of newer changing standards. While the changes are very difficult for industry to comprehend and implement, MRO has to oversee and enforce the standards, looks to the committee to assist in education and implementation of the industry. Throughout this committee, it is an avenue for industry to express the confusion and work together to achieve the same goal on how to comply with the education needed for compliance in these standards. 2017 was not as intense in the changing of requirements as 2016 was, so that was welcome. While two of our standards were removed, two new ones were added, thus not changing our responsibility. The new CIP 4.3 standards were implemented in 2017 and required confidential policies to be written and implemented. So we now have more policies in place for physical security control. Our cybersecurity incident response plan, our VPS cybersecurity awareness plan, and our VPS key control program. And these are all required by NERC. All of our NERC required policies are updated annually and continue to be living documents in an effort to remain compliant with NERC standards. Do you have any questions? Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Janelle. There's a lot that goes into those and those standards. I understand that. So again, thank you for your work that you've done there. Next on the agenda is our power supply report, and we'll ask our analyst Michelle Maritsky to inform us on that.
Thank you. So on the power supply comparison report, we're looking at December 2016 versus 2017, and December's power supply cost in 2017 was $52.44 per megawatt power higher, which is a 23.5% increase from 2016. A couple of notes about that. Generation was just under 2,000 megawatt hours lower in 2017 at a cost of $96,386. The reduced generation was due to Boiler 3 being shut down twice for leak repairs in December. As a result, we were required to purchase just over 1,000 megawatts from the market to cover the load, which was an increase of $84,174 from 2016. And in addition, we have a current short-term firm gas contract with Connect Energy that is needed for district heat. This increased our cost by about $70,000 per month, and it represents the transportation, distribution, and firm demand costs to keep district heat running in case of a gas curtailment. This firm gas contract allows us to retain up to 1,200 decatherms of gas in case of a curtailment. In the past, a curtailment of gas would not allow us to run any gas, so we were required to use more coal to cover the district heat. Also factoring into the increases was increase in transmission from 2016 was about $37,600. Any questions right there? So looking right below at the budget versus actual bar graph, December's actuals were 15.9% higher than the budget for December. And note that the budget included generation for the entire month and did not include consideration of the firm gas contract. So if you look at the next page, we have our real-time LMP average in December. It was $18.37. That was $7.49 lower than in 2016. The day-ahead LMP average was $19.63, which was $6.07 lower than last year. And then noting large volume dual fuel gas prices for December were $4.16 per decatherm. The cost of gas through our Connect Energy contract in December was $4.69 per decatherm. Any other questions?
Does not look like it. Thank you very much, Michelle, for the report. And then we'll go on and we'll let Mr. Smith talk to us about the turbine report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You've already heard the challenges that we're experiencing with turbine number 4. Turbine number 3, however, has actually had a strong January with just under 400,000 kilowatt hours produced. In these cold winter months, anytime we do have an outage, it's important to get it back online quickly because as those oils get really cold, they start to gel up and it actually takes quite a while to warm the turbine back up just to get it operating again. So our January of 18 was pretty impressive, and hopefully we can continue progress in that direction. Any questions?
Just getting the one back up and operating. That's the only thing there. Thank you very much, Mr. Smith.
Thank you
for your report. Okay, and then we'll go on to our general manager, Mr. Heron. Report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our first item under the general manager's report is a possibility of changing. Meeting is set for February 26th. However, Commissioner Lamar and Commissioner Mabu and myself will be at our APP annual conference out in D.C., our annual meeting. So I don't know if everyone had a chance to check their schedules, if Friday the 23rd works, or if we should have them send out a calendar invite for everyone to check their calendars.
Any at this point, any conflict? Just remember, if there's a conflict, you have to go out to D.C. next time. No.
Is the commission supportive of changing it to Friday?
No.
Have a quorum at least.
Everybody, okay. All right.
Okay.
We'll go with that change.
Okay, thank you.
And then the balance of the list, things that you have there is additional meetings coming up, as well as action that's coming before you, joint action agency. As Chris alluded to a little bit earlier, we're hoping to have a joint our planning committee to meet with them here maybe Friday this week. So please watch for an invite for that. And then additional projects, as Jaron alluded to earlier as well, will be before you at the next meeting for approval with Pram Substation. And then additional labor and planning committee meetings as needed. Some of the items that are outstanding yet are listed there. So unless there's additional questions, that would conclude my report.
Any questions on any of that from anyone? And of course, you know that I'm always going to encourage with the MMUA, the conferences come up for those, to encourage if you're at all able to attend any of those. I know when you're working all the time, it's not always easy to get away, but just encourage that. Okay, any further business to come before the commission? Anything from any of the reporters? Any further information to come before the commission? Hearing none, meeting adjourned.
Thank you, everyone.